Everybody get a handout? Did anybody not get a handout? Okay, let's get you all. Two. James, all right. All right. The clock on the back wall says 9 o'clock, and although we don't have a buzzer, we're going to go ahead and get started. All right, we're studying Joshua, and we've spent about a quarter of a year on chapters 1 through about halfway through chapter 13. I have pretty much a hard stop of June, so I have the rest of April and all of May to get through the rest of the book, but the good news is it's going to be pretty easy. Today's lesson, if we get through it all, will cover almost 7 whole chapters. And so up to this point, it's been very exciting, right? Battles, wars, campaigns, and lots of action. But now, it's handing out land. And so, I think I'll just speak for myself. My tendency, when I get to the begats, when I get to the land allotments, I kind of skip over a lot of stuff. Well, we really can't do that with this. The actual land, this tribe got these cities. That's really good for historians. On your handout, I gave you a map. That's what those cities are really good for. For historians to actually draw boundary lines and whatnot. And we could go through those cities and say, hey, remember when we talked about this? This is what happened before in the book of Joshua or before with the patriarchs. You know, this city became this city later, you know, with the divided and united kingdom or maybe in the New Testament. We're not going to do that today. What we're going to do is we're going to skip over a lot of the listing of the cities. Y'all don't need to sit there and listen to me mispronounce a bunch of names. But we are going to go over some of the juicy nuggets in the middle of all of that. And there is actually quite a bit. So in the background, all the fighting is over. The land that Joshua was to conquer had been taken. The Bible says, the writer says in Joshua 11:15, he, Joshua, left nothing undone of all that the Lord had commanded Moses. So after we hear about all the land being conquered, the writer recaps, hey, here's all the land that was conquered, all the kings that were delivered into their hand. And then there is a quick summation in the beginning of chapter 13 about what was left to be taken. So let's go ahead and turn to Joshua chapter 13. And we're going to pick up where we left off 2 weeks ago. But the point here is that we've come to this far. Everything that God promised had come true thus far. The land had been conquered. Yes, there were some cities still to be taken, but that wasn't Joshua's job. The writer says that Joshua did everything that he was supposed to do, and now we're going to find the tribes were supposed to be given allotment of their land, and then they were supposed to continue the conquest, eradicate all the Canaanites from the land. And we're going to see that some of them were not able to do that, did not do that. And so in the rest of chapter 13, just as a quick overview, the rest of chapter 13 is the allotments east of the Jordan. This is nothing new to us. Back in Numbers, we found that when Moses conquered the east side of the Jordan, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh said, hey, we really like this land. Can we have it? And Moses said, yes, but you're still going to have to be part of the conquest, but then you're going to go come back and re-inherit this land. You can come back when war is over. And so we're going to see that at the end of chapter 13. Chapters 14 through 19 is the rest of the allotment given out, is really what it is. So the 9.5 tribes that inherit land west of the Jordan. So that's chapter 14 through the end of chapter 19. Now we are going to quickly come back to this slide. I showed you this slide a few weeks ago, probably one of the first few weeks. I didn't really realize this at first, but it bears, if you're reading the tribes, you may know, make this connection, that the 12 sons of Jacob are not the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, Jacob's other name was Israel. He was renamed later. But we will find in our readings today multiple references of the tribe of Levi did not get a land inheritance. And this is nothing new. The tribe of Levi was not considered one of the 12 tribes. In Numbers, when they're numbered, those that 603,550 were men of war, so they didn't include elderly, it didn't include children, and it didn't include women. But it also didn't include the Levites. And so they weren't included in this. These are the people that were set apart, and we're going to come back to that today. They had a special place. They had a special job to do. But if you line them out, now you have 11 tribes. So what do we do with that? Well, we find in Genesis chapter 48, that Joseph had two sons over here on the right, Ephraim and Manasseh. And basically in Genesis chapter 48, Jacob adopts those two men as his grandchildren. He adopts them as his children. And so when you line out Joseph, because there was no tribe of Joseph, now you have 12 tribes. And I put on the slide all of the references to where they each got their allotment. So you can see on here every book, chapter, and verse of where these tribes received their inheritance. So it's interesting to see that the 12 sons of Jacob, who was also known as Israel, would not necessarily become the 12 tribes of Israel, but now it makes sense. So the unbelievers, when they say these 12 don't match up, and so it's a contradiction in the Bible, you can say, well, here's the explanation why you see this. Okay, so what the writer is going to do...
Oh, no.
I left my clicker on for a while, and it looks like it died on me. Huh? The manual way. That really... I'm sorry? Well, it's a triple A. I know we have double A's. All right, so what the writer is going to do, I'll just click it, is he's going to go up the allotments on the eastern side. So he's going to go Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh. That's going to be chapter 13. And then he's going to, the tribe of Judah is going to get an allotment. Ephraim and Manasseh are going to get their allotments as well. And those are going to be based on promises already given or lots already taken. But at this point, the writer is going to change the tune, if you will, and the rest of the tribes are going to get their allotment by lot, by casting lots, and we'll talk more about that. So that's Benjamin, Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, and then Dan, which is in the north and in the south. One quick note, I'm not really sure why, so somebody may be able to tell me, but I could not find a map that showed where Judah and Simeon's line was, what divided their lands. It just has the two of them there in the south. So if anybody knows, I'm all ears. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, there actually really isn't one because they decided they're going to go conquering together. And as it turns out, because they make that decision, we don't know when that decision begins to be made, but they say that our land is too much for us, and so we're going to need your help. And so really they go in as partners. and so it is not as straightforward delineation because of that.
Now, I didn't read that in Joshua. I do know that there are cities that are listed, like I said before, for Judah, and there are cities listed in Simeon. So I drew that line there that you see, and basically I put the cities that were given to Judah on the north side of the line, and I put the cities that were listed, at least on this map, on the south side of that line for Simeon. So that's just a note. Just like anything else, we're not absolutely sure where each one of these boundary lines are. And so we take a little bit on faith. It doesn't necessarily matter if it's a mile north or a mile south. But it's a good guideline for us to at least visually picture how the land was divided up. All right. So we're going to pick up in chapter 13. It's a continuation of verse 7. We finished in verse 7 2 weeks ago. In the beginning of verses 1 through 7 of chapter 13 was this is the land left to be taken. And the writer is really cool about how he did this. He finishes that section up with verse 7. He says, "Now therefore divide this land for an inheritance to the 9 tribes and the half tribe of Manasseh." So he's saying this is the west side of the Jordan. And then he rolls right into the land that gets allotted on the east side of the Jordan. And that's verse 8. So we'll pick, that's verse 8. And then he names off a bunch of places. We're actually going to pick up reading in verse 13. He says, "But the Israelites did not drive out the people of Geshur and Makkah, so they continue to live among the Israelites to this day." All right, we're going to see this multiple times, it's in your outline, multiple times in the readings throughout the next seven chapters. This tribe, or in this case it just says the Israelites, did not or could not drive out the people living in Canaan. So this is a dangerous sign of Israel's waning vigilance. It's the first of a series of accusations of tribal failure to follow up the initial conquest. Remember, God says, I want you to go in there, I want you to kill every single one of them, and he tells them why. Because if they're living among you, they're going to pull you to their idols. So, we're one verse in, and there's already an application for us. And that is that partial obedience can be considered disobedience. And God expects complete obedience. God told them, this is what's going to happen if you do this. And there were results of that. We see throughout the rest of the Old Testament, this roller coaster ride of being pulled into idolatry and being brought out of it and going into slavery. And a lot of that is as a result of their inability to go continue to conquer the land. And now we know from the beginning of Joshua and even before then, but we know in the first 13 chapters, if you put your faith and your trust in God, you are going to be able to overcome insurmountable odds, right? When the northern campaign, the writer of Joshua says that the kings that made the alliance in the northern campaign were more than the sand on the seashore. And we know that going into this conquest, Joshua had 40,000 fighting men. 40,000 versus as many as the seashore. And God gave them victory over them. And he gave them victory over, you know, Jericho, which when the walled city was shut up, then it could withstand a besiege of a year. And so when the tribes get their inheritance, there's no reason for them to not be able to conquer these people, right? So when I have all four references here. Two of them say they did not drive out the Canaanites. Two of them say they could not take possession of these cities or they could not drive them out. We can only conclude, I only conclude, that it was based on their lack of trying or their lack of faith, based on all the texts that we've read so far. And so the only loss that we see in the beginning of the book of Joshua is when they didn't obey the Lord. And they lost 36 men because of it. And it was a little bitty thing, right? And that tells us where our priorities are. Us as physical people, right? Physical bodies, humans, we look at numbers. We look at might on this earth. But God says, I'm going to let you be destroyed by a small force that you outnumber. And I'm going to let you destroy a much, much larger force. And so we need to take a lesson from that, that we must have complete obedience. We have the thing that immediately comes to mind is responding to the gospel the way the New Testament tells us that we should. Some people leave pieces out, right? Based on the examples that were given, and they explain it away or say that it's not necessary. Partial obedience. God expects full obedience. Do it because he said so, but he also tells you why a lot of these things are done. And then there's a second part of this lesson to me that we get from the same thought, and that is that faith requires daily diligence. Think about these people, right? They come in, and when Joshua's in charge of them, and all the 12 tribes or all their fighting men are in this campaign, that may seem like, okay, we're all together, this is great, we're doing great things. And then when they split up into 12, maybe they think, okay, well, I'm just one tribe now, so maybe I can't do this. It reminded me of in the New King James Version, Hebrews 11:6, it says, he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And then you think, on the thought of daily, I think the King James adds daily, but take up my cross daily and follow him. So this is something that you can't just respond to the gospel and think, I'm good, right? Just like the Israelites couldn't just have this big campaign and then say, I'm good. I can just inherit the land. I can take it easy. I can put my feet up. God said, there's more to do. And you need to keep working. And so there's an application there. And then there's this battling via a group only gets you so far. So that's as the 12 tribes are fighting together, there's strength in that, just like we as a congregation or as the Church Universal have each other to rely upon. But we must also work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. And so there's this group mentality, but that doesn't abdicate your responsibility when you're an individual as well. Jeremy.
You talked about this idea of the difference between they could not and did not. And I think that we fall prey to that same kind of mentality today. We say, you know, I just can't get over this sin. Whatever this thing is, I just can't break it. I just can't get past it. And the question is, can or won't?
Right.
The question is, are we going to have the diligence that is appropriate? Are we going to focus on this individually? And are we going to use all of our resources that are available to us and lean on God for it? Because, we get to certain points where we let this sin hang out just long enough. We don't eradicate it completely from our lives. It's in some dark corner. And then it becomes exactly like these people were to these tribes. It becomes a snare. Yeah. And it ends up tripping us up over and over and over again.
Absolutely. And I think that this could not statement. I didn't go back to the original language. Kind of like I mentioned before, it's not that they didn't have the strength to do it, because we've seen time and time again where if they rely on God, He will do it for them. So maybe they didn't have the faith required. We're going to find out later, Caleb had tremendous faith, and he's rewarded for it. But he's from the tribe of Judah, and Judah was not able to drive out peoples either. So, that goes back to the individual maybe fighting the good fight and being successful at it, but the group may be struggling with it. So that's the application that I had for verse 13. So let's pick up in verse 14, and we'll see another trend throughout the next seven chapters. And it says, but to the tribe of Levi he gave no inheritance, that is Joshua and God, really, since the food offerings presented to the Lord, the God of Israel, are their inheritance, as he promised them. So this verse shows us that God provided for them, the Levites, physically, in this case, food, even though they didn't have flocks or fields, which I think they actually did. But later in verse 32 or 33, we're told that God was their spiritual inheritance. So God provides for the tribe of Levi, for the Levites, both physically and spiritually, even though he didn't give them a tremendous land inheritance. Now, they got cities because they have to have places to live, and we'll get into that in chapters 20 and 21. Their sole purpose in life was to serve in the temple as mediators between the people and God, and having to work the land or the flocks would have taken them away from that mission. And so I think it's in your handout. I think there's three or four different references of, and we're going to read them, but there are three or four different references where the writer says, the Levites didn't receive any inheritance. Anytime I see repetition of something, in my mind I say, there's a takeaway here. I really couldn't figure out, other than the fact that the writer wanted us to be reminded that the Levites didn't get an inheritance, what the real key takeaway is for this. And maybe it was for the Israelites going down the road.
I see one more on that. It's distributed the Levites among all the nations.
They do.
Kept their religion more or less intact.
Absolutely. So what Donnie said was that they distribute the Levites throughout all of the land. It keeps their religion intact. And really, I think there's an elder reference there, maybe. I'm not sure. We're actually going to get to that in chapter 20 and 21. And in chapter 20, we're going to go into cities of refuge, where if you unintentionally kill someone, you can go to the city of refuge, and they are spread out as well. But the Levites inherit many cities, and they are spread out through the land. So imagine if there was like one place, the epicenter, where all the Levites were, the farthest reaching lands wouldn't have as readily access to those high priests, to those Levites. And so that's a very good point. They did distribute them.
Which I think is a contrast. You do have, you have early on, you've got this idea that Shiloh is going to be where the ark and the tent end up. But it doesn't really stay there forever. It becomes Jerusalem later on. So we have this central place, but you don't have everyone have to go to either Shiloh or later on Jerusalem for everything that you need a priest for. So really what you do is you have this availability for them to go to the priests that are scattered throughout for a lot of teaching opportunities as well. And that was something that they were required to do. And I think that sometimes we have this idea that only kind of teaching or the only kind of help or the only kind of appropriate contact they had with the Levites or the priests was only in Jerusalem, but
right.
It's well said that they were everywhere.
Yeah, they were well spread out, and that's good. All right, so we pick up in, we'll continue here. Verse 33 of chapter 13, it is the second mention here. It says, but to the tribe of Levi, Moses had given no inheritance. The Lord, the God of Israel, is their inheritance, as he promised them. So it's a continuation of that thought. We pick up in chapter 14. Now, 14 through 19, as I said, was all the inheritance of the West. It starts with Caleb receiving his inheritance, and it ends with Joshua receiving his inheritance. And I thought that was just cool, right? The two spies who came back with a good report when the 12 spies were sent back, they bookend this receiving of their inheritance. So I really, really like that. I'm not sure if the writer was intending to do that, but I like to think he was, because that's just cool. So picking up in chapter 14, verse 1. Now these are the territories which the son of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel apportioned to them for an inheritance. By the lot of their inheritance, as the Lord commanded through Moses for the nine tribes and the half tribe. For Moses had given to the inheritance of the two tribes and the half tribe beyond the Jordan, but he did not give an inheritance to the Levites among them. So there's another reference. For the sons of Joseph were two tribes, I showed you that on the slide, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they did not give a portion to the Levites of the land except cities to live in, with their pasture lands for their livestock and for their property. Thus the sons of Israel did just as the Lord commanded Moses, and they divided the land. All right, so talked about the Levites. This is the third time that the author describes what the Levites got in lieu of territory. This time it does mention that they got the cities. We'll get to that in chapter 21. But it is necessary for them to have cities because these cities would also become cities of refuge. Kind of letting a little bit of the cat out of the bag for next week. But if you're in a city of refuge and you're someone who unintentionally killed someone, you had to go there until the high priest died. Well, you don't have a high priest unless you have a Levite. And so the Levites needed to be inherit the cities where there were cities of refuge. And there were only six of those. Like I said, we'll come back to that in the next lesson. Also, verse 5, just as the Lord commanded should stick out in our minds. At least it does to mine. In Leviticus, as the priests are being told what they should do, they go over and over and over again about how they did X, Y, and Z just as the Lord commanded. And then they did this just as the Lord commanded. And then Aaron did this just as the Lord commanded. And then you get to chapter 10 with Nadab and Abihu, and it says they offered fire as the Lord had not commanded. And so that should make the hair on the back of your head stand up and say, oh boy. And you do find out that their fate was that fire would come down and consume them rather than the altar. And so, again, that was definitely familiar to the Israelites who read this, which was part of the book of the law, right? Later, that was required to be read. And they read this and they say, good boy, right? Good job. Because they were familiar with this narrative in Leviticus. And so it sticks out in my mind.
Are you going to talk about the lots now or later?
Later. Okay. Verse 6. The sons of Judah drew near to Joshua in Gilgal. You're familiar with that name, right? That was their base camp. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, you know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. That's where they were sent out to spy out the land. I was 40 years old, remember that, when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought word back to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear, but I followed the Lord my God fully. This statement sounds awfully confident, but it's confirmed in the next verse, and it's confirmed in verse 14 as well. But notice his approach. Caleb comes and he describes his faith. I went out and I spied the land with you, Joshua, you know, because you were there. We came back and we said we can take this land because we had faith, essentially is what he's saying here. And he reminds them, the priests and Joshua, of the promise that was given to him, Caleb, and then he makes his request. I had great faith. I was promised this. Now I would like to take that promise. So Caleb's petition is confident, but not overconfident. He's not cocky about this. He just says, look, this is why I said I was given this promise, and now I would like to take that. So he continues that on in verse 9. He says, so Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Now behold, the Lord has let me live. This is back to Caleb speaking. Just as he spoke, these 45 years from the time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I am 85 years old today. This account has tremendous value in and of itself. But it tells us that the conquest of Canaan took 5 years. Because he said, I was 40 years old when we spied out the land. And we know that now their punishment for the 10 spies not having faith was 40 years. And he says, he's let me live these 45 years. So what's left over is the 5 years. So the conquest of Canaan took 5 years. So there's value just in this narrative as well. Okay, so verse 11, he continues on. He says, I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now, for war and for going out and coming in. That's a phrase that shepherds used. That meant essentially so as the sheep would go out and they would come in. That is a reference, an idiom, if you will, for just my daily activities, going out and coming in. Verse 12. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that Anakim were still there, with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. Okay, three things on just this passage, verses 11 and 12. He says he was just as strong as he was then. He's just as strong at 85. And this should be somewhat familiar to us, right? Moses was 120, and the scriptures say that his eyes weren't dimmed. He was just as strong as he was, 50 years ago. I don't remember exactly what it says, but basically, he didn't lose his strength at 120 years old, right? I can tell you I'm already losing strength, and I'm only 35, so. Caleb also says, perhaps the Lord will be with me. I don't think this is an indication of any kind of lack of faith. We've already proven he had great faith, and he's being rewarded for it. I consider this perhaps word like we would use Lord willing. Lord willing, he will be with me. And I think Caleb puts his trust in the Lord for sure. The really cool part about this, we're going to see he's given what he's asked for. Caleb, after all these years, gets to inherit the land that he said the Israelites could take 45 years ago. So it's actually, 45 years ago, he was like, we can take this. We can do it. Let's do it right now. He has to wait 45 years to see that come. And now he gets to tell you the great, I told you so, right? So how great must that have been for him, and how great of an encouragement? We're going to see what he actually does with that faith. So he actually, and I'll just summarize now, he draws from that faith and the fact that God has maintained his strength to drive out the remaining Anakim. Now, I think we all know who the Anakim are. I've mentioned them multiple times. They were the giants in the land. And they're probably the people that the other 10 spies were afraid of and said, they're giants. We're grasshoppers. We can't take these people. And Caleb's like, yeah, we can. And it would be his duty later to continue to eradicate the Anakim. And so remember I said, and maybe it was the last lesson, we think of David as the giant killer. But he killed the one giant that makes us think he's a giant killer. But Joshua and Caleb were the real giant killers because they eradicated whole peoples, whole giants of the Anakim. All right, so picking up in verse 13, we're going to see that Caleb receives his request. It says, so Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb. Now remember, Hebron was part of the southern campaign. The son of Jephunneh for an inheritance. Go ahead, Jeremy.
No, I'm saying the interesting postscript to the story is the first of the judges is Othniel.
Okay. We're going to get to that. Okay. He's mentioned later, actually. We're going to get to that in the next chapter. Okay, so verse 14. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day, because he followed the Lord God of Israel fully. So here's the yes. When Caleb said it, the writer says he was right. He did follow God fully. Verse 15, now the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba, which literally means city of Arba. For Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim, so this city was named after him. Then the land had rest from war. All right, so let's pick up Joshua chapter 15, and we're going to learn more about Caleb and his brother. Now he gave Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, a portion among the sons of Judah, according to the command of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kiriath Arba, Arba being the father of Anak, that is Hebron. Caleb drove out from there the three sons of Anak, Sheshai and Ahiman and Talmai, the children of Anak. Then he went up from there against the inhabitants of Debir. That was also one of the cities of the southern campaign. Now the name of Debir was formerly Kiriath Sefer. And Caleb said, "The one who attacks Kiriath Sefer and captures it, I will give him Aksha, my daughter, as a wife." Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, captured it. So he gave him Aksha, his daughter, Caleb's daughter, as a wife. So basically, Caleb's brother gets to marry Caleb's daughter. So Caleb's brother marries his niece out of this. But the rest of the story is that in Judges chapter 3, Othniel becomes the first judge. Go ahead. Now you're up.
You nailed it. The only thing is Othniel is his nephew, not his brother. Because Othniel's son of Kenaz is the brother.
Son of his brother. So it is his cousin. It's his cousin. Sorry. Right.
Yeah,
he marries his cousin.
He marries his cousin, yeah.
I knew this. We were talking about that last night. My dad and I were talking about that. I missed that. Son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb. So, yes. I had it written down here that it was his cousin. I was like, that's his niece. Okay. So, Caleb's brother's son married Caleb's daughter. So, it's his cousin. And then we skip all the way down to verse 63. Again, this is talking about the territory for Judah, not just Caleb, but Caleb was from the tribe of Judah. It says, "As for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the sons of Judah could not drive them out. So the Jebusites lived with the sons of Judah at Jerusalem until this day." Jerusalem was not one of the cities that Caleb was supposed to take over. And so this is not any fault of his own. But the tribe of Judah here is accused of not driving out the inhabitants of Jerusalem. We talked about the could not versus would not. And remember that the king of Jerusalem was the one who picked the fight that started the southern campaign. And so they get to stay there. For chapter 16, there's a key verse in that one, and that's verse 10. So this is the territory given to Ephraim. It says, "But they did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites live in the midst of Ephraim to this day and became forced laborers." And so we see that the Canaanites do have a presence amongst the Israelites, and it will take its toll. Then we move on to Manasseh in chapter 17. Picking up in verse 3, we see a whole nother story here that's interesting. We're not going to anchor on it too much. But verse 3 says, "However, Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, had no sons, only daughters. And these are the names of his daughters, Mahalah and Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. They came near before Eleazar the priest and before Joshua the son of Nun and before the leaders, saying, 'The Lord commanded Moses to give us an inheritance among our brothers.' So according to the command of the Lord, he gave them an inheritance among their father's brothers." And so this kind of concludes the story. I think it continues on. But in the case of his daughters, we see that he's given this land, right? And according to the customs, that land would be transferred down to his sons. But he didn't have sons. And so his daughters come and plead for this land inheritance, and eventually this will be given to them. So the background on this incident, I think it's in your notes, comes from Numbers chapter 27 and chapter 36. And so Zelophehad died having no sons. His five daughters appealed to Moses, asking what would have been their father's land inheritance be given to them, vice the nearest male relative. And Moses referred the matter to Yahweh, who decided in their favor. And so, kind of like Caleb went to Joshua and the priests and said, "I'm ready for my inheritance. This was the promise given to me." And it was years ago, right? So I forget things happened days ago. I'm certain that there are people who have forgotten things in this time as well. And so these daughters come and say, "Hey, we were promised this by Moses. we would like to take our inheritance. And so they are. So that's an interesting thought there along the way. God fulfills his promises. That's the theme, right? Verse 12, it says, but the sons of Manasseh could not take possession of these cities because the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. It came about when the sons of Israel became strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but they did not drive them out completely. Listen to the sound of this. The Israelites are supposed to come in and just eradicate these people, right? Just roll over them. You show them no mercy. We'll come back to that. That's in your handout as well. That was the command they were given. Yeah, but these guys are stubborn. They really want to live in this land. Verse 12 says, because the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. And so because they were stubborn and they wanted to hang out in that land, okay, fine. You can live amongst us, but you're going to be put to forced labor. I don't know if there's any connection here to the Gibeonites who were forced to be woodcutters and water carriers. Completely different circumstances, obviously. But nevertheless, disobedience to God's command. All right. So that's those references are in of God saying what you needed to do to come into land. Those are on your handout there in Exodus and Deuteronomy. Continuing in verse 14, then the sons of Joseph spoke to Joshua, saying, so this is Ephraim and Manasseh, right? Why have you given me only one lot and one portion for an inheritance, since I am numerous people whom the Lord has thus far blessed? Joshua said to them, if you are a numerous people, go up to the forest and clear a place for yourself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the Rephaim, since the hill country of Ephraim is too narrow for you. The sons of Joseph said, the hill country is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites who live in the valley land have chariots of iron. Both those who were in Beth Shean and its towns and those who are in the valley of Jezreel. Joshua spoke to the house of Joseph, to Ephraim and Manasseh, saying, you are a numerous people and have great power. You shall not have one lot only, but the hill country shall be yours. For though it is a forest, you shall clear it, and to its farthest borders it shall be yours. For you shall drive out the Canaanites, even though they have chariots of iron and though they are strong. Me as a military guy, I'm hearing him say, stop complaining. Do what you're supposed to do. Now, let's go back to the map. Manasseh has some big old land. Manasseh is the top chunk there. I'll make it flash, right? And then that's on the eastern side. And then Ephraim, that's Ephraim. And then Manasseh, the second half, has big old chunk as well. Other than Judah and Simeon, which we don't really know how much was what, they have huge chunks of land and they're coming back and they're complaining. Well, we have a lot of people and they have iron chariots and I don't want to, don't make me do stuff, right? Just give me more land, right? And so I think that there's a lesson for us to learn here as well. Take advantage of what God gives you. If they had done with the land what they were supposed to do, they would have been well provided for. And so I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, Joshua's right. Guys, stop complaining. Just do what you're supposed to with what you have. But then I thought, wow, do I do what I'm supposed to with what I have? And so you think about some of these things. These are just the things that came to my mind. I have money. Do I share that money? The scriptures tell us that the man shall work, but it doesn't say so that you get money. It tells you that so you can give it away. So do I give it away? Do I do what God tells me to do with what he has given me? My home. We're blessed. My wife, my family and I are blessed with a very large home in this area because I guess there's a requirement for basements. And so we have plenty of room. Do I share my home? We have two cars. They're very reliable. Do I share my cars? And we have food. We have food to spare. So do I share that? There is a requirement for Christians to be benevolent. And God gives us blessings. And so now I'm pretty hesitant when I go in prayer to God asking him for stuff. Because I hear Joshua in the background kind of saying, well, are you using what you're given the way God intended it to be? Don't come asking me for more when you haven't even used what God has given you the way you're supposed to. Do Jeremy.
But it's hard.
It's hard. I like my stuff. I like my money. Yeah. Sometimes it is really, really hard. But that's not an excuse. It was an excuse for Ephraim and Manasseh.
Sir. We're going to be talking about marriage. And money is going to be one of the main problems in marriage. It's not lack of money. It's just money. And the way the husband and wife treat each other with money is the major topic of a divorce. It's not adultery. It's the major topic of a divorce.
All right. So Donnie's saying that at this time period later, probably in the beginning of June, they're going to pick up on marriage. Donnie's going to be leading that. And he's saying that one of the main topics for problems in marriage is money. And, excuse me, it's not necessarily a lack of money. It's how you deal with each other with that money. And so money, the love of money is the root of all evil for sure. And so what we see here is the Lord provided. The Lord gave them an inheritance. And they really shouldn't have come back and asked for more of it. So we need to take full advantage of the things God gives us, just like they were expected to take full advantage of the things given to them. All right, so in the last 5 minutes, we'll see if we can get through the next two chapters. Chapter 18. Then the whole congregation of the sons of Israel assembled themselves at Shiloh and set up the tent of meeting there. And the land was subdued before them. So Shiloh, if you recall, you can see it on your map. It's very centrally located. Shiloh belongs to Ephraim, and Shiloh was also the place after the central campaign where the Israelites went and they read the law. You had the two hilltops, and Joseph read the entire law to all of them. So again, centrally located, in the same place where the law was read. Verse 2. There remained among the sons of Israel seven tribes who had not divided their inheritance. So Joshua said to the sons of Israel, immediately you get an idea, okay, they had not divided their inheritance. They had received an inheritance, but they're probably bickering over boundary lines. That's what I get here, because Joshua is going to kind of chastise them here. Verse 3. How long will you put off entering to take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you? So he's going to give them a solution. He says, provide for yourselves three men from each tribe that I may send them, and that they may arise and walk through the land and write a description of it according to their inheritance. Then they shall return to me. They shall divide it into seven portions. Judah shall stay in its territory on the south, and the house of Joseph shall stay in their territory on the north. You shall describe the land in seven divisions and bring the description here to me. I will cast lots for you here before the Lord our God. For the Levites have no portion among you, because the priesthood of the Lord is their inheritance. Gad and Reuben and the half-tribe of Manasseh also received their inheritance eastward beyond the Jordan, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave them. Interesting here that he says, you, the rest of the seven of you, are going to take people from your tribes, and you're going to go out and you're going to divide the land. And they don't know who's going to get this land, so it makes it pretty fair. My mom has always said that she has a brother. And so in the wisdom of my grandfather and grandmother, when they needed to split something, they said, okay, one of you is going to cut and the other one's going to choose the piece. And it always made it fair, because when you're cutting your own piece, they're like, I'm going to get this big old slice right here. But when you're making the cut and the other person is making the choice which one they want, you're going to make it as fair as possible, because you know they're going to pick the better piece, right? And so the wisdom of this task is pretty cool. You go out and you apportion the rest of the land up in seven different pieces, and when you come back, the Lord is going to choose which piece you're going to get. And that's where we get into the lots. Casting lots here is, in the Old Testament, was considering the Lord is going to make the decision. There would be, this is a quote from one of the commentaries, I really liked it. There would be no end of complaint, quarreling, or discontent unless the tribes were assured that their lot was determined by the hand of God, that their territory was theirs by Yahweh's decision. So just like the cutting of the piece of cake, look, you made your divisions, and God's going to choose which divisions you're going to get. And so it is going to be fair, because God is the one making the decision. Did you have more to add there, Jeremy?
I just find it fascinating. We don't necessarily consider chance to be God's decision on something, but they absolutely did. They rolled dice to apportion land. that's crazy from our perspective.
And we look at the apportionment. Well, you can look on your handout as well. But some of these folks didn't get very much at all, right? Dan's got a little chunk up to the north, a little chunk down to the south. Zebulun and Issachar, and so they make the boundary lines, and God makes the decision who gets what. We'll finish out verses 8 and 9 here, and then that's actually the rest of the lesson. Then the men arose and went, and Joshua commanded those who went to describe the land, saying, well, I'll just summarize. He did what he said he was going to do. He drew lots, they took land, and then chapter 19 is nothing but the territory through the rest of those 7 different tribes. And that finishes lesson 14. Any quick questions or comments before we... Actually, it doesn't. We'll finish that up next week. Yes, ma'am. Okay.
So if you go back to right before Jacob died in Genesis, when he went through each one of his sons and pronounced a blessing, when he came to Simeon and Levi, he said, their instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. And then he ended it with, cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel.
So they needed Judah.
That's why they were absorbed.
Okay, so they teamed up. Verses 49 through 51 is Joshua receiving his inheritance, just as was promised. So we'll pick up in chapter 20 next week. Thank you for your time and attention.